It's the Dry Heat Check with Jayco and Espo. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. Episode Scott Player for episode 10. We got to give the nod to the last guy ever to wear the single bar helmet in a National League football game. National football game. Not where I'm still in baseball mode, I guess.
In the National League now.
You're playing in the National League.
Those are the different cards.
And the NFL, just to abbreviate it.
You know what? We had to go with a punter. It only makes sense. And a single bar face mask punter, that screams Dry Heat Check and the obscurity that is this show. I am so glad we went with Scott Player today.
And let's also talk about, he was a very good punter. He was with the Cardinals for a long time, wasn't he?
Well, look, the punter was the best position on the Cardinals for years because he was the guy that got the most work out there
for
basically the first 20 years of their existence. Jeff Fiegels was some people's favorite player back
in
the
90s. Who also wore the number 10.
This is true. Look at that. Coming full circle there for you.
Other notables who wore the number 10, starting with the Suns, Sam Cassell, Milt Palacio. I thought that was a fun, obscure name for you. Leandro Barbosa, Zoran Drogic, who may or may not make another appearance on this episode. And then last year, Sonny Weems.
Sonny Weems.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. I like that guy. And then Chase Buttinger, the former Arizona Wildcat. Both those guys wore the number 10 last year. For the Cardinals, mention Jeff Fiegels. This episode is named after Scott Player, and the current Cardinal wearing the number 10 is Britt Golden.
Who, at least for now.
At least for now. Diamondbacks. Now, this was the 1A for naming the episode after. Tony Bautista, the original number 10 for the Diamondbacks, and probably the only other guy in baseball history to be standing facing the pitcher in his batting stance while the guy was pitching from the stretch.
I don't know how the next guy on this list wasn't the guy that you would have thought of for the Diamondbacks. Alex Cintron seems like the perfect kind of guy for what we do.
Yeah, that's true. Justin Upton, and then the babe Chris Herman, who is currently wearing the number 10 for the Diamondbacks. And then the Coyotes. I had some fun with these. Good guys, good names, recalling who wore the number 10, starting with Oleg Tverdowski, who was the stud Russian when the team first moved to town. You've got Trevor Letowski, Tony Amonte, who was the...
He was a big acquisition.
Huge acquisition. Didn't pan out, only played 1 year. He was great with the Blackhawks for years. Then you got Marty Erott, and then most recently, the rising, shining star along with Max Domi is Anthony Duclair, who currently wears the number 10 for the Coyotes.
I always love when you've got to pronounce those Russian or Swedish or whatever the names are in hockey. It's always fun because you do amazingly well. I would have butchered every single one of those.
Well, I was practicing them all night. I was using flashcards, you know, before we were getting ready for the show.
You had your daughters help you with flashcards?
Yep, they were saying if I did it or not. You know, my four-year-old is great at pronunciating Russian and Swedish names. So
we're pronouncing them.
Or pronouncing.
Well.
Yes. See, we're great with the vocabulary over here.
You're good with the Russian and the Swedish.
But not English.
Not with the English.
Yep, nope, that's a problem. Coming up on the show, hey, we have a guest for the show today. I got to catch up with John Sally earlier this week, and he had some really interesting stuff to say all over the spectrum, which is perfect for the Dry Heat Check. So we're going to put in our first interview.
I see how it is. You don't invite me to the event you talk to him at. You don't let me talk with John Sally. I'm just the guy you invite over to scream into a mic once a week.
Well, you wanted six airing of grievances last week, and then at the last minute, after I gave you two, you pulled out 2.5. So
it's punishment. I see.
I think it's punishment. Yep. We're going to talk a little U of A BYU, not just the game, but everything around the matchup that's going to be at University of Phoenix Stadium this weekend. NBA.com released a rookie survey. All the rookies voted on who they think is going to be rookie of the year, who's the best defender, who do they think is going to have the best career. Some interesting stuff from that. Ocho Cinco wants a Diamondbacks jersey, and then we'll play trade extend release for this week's edition. Now, let's get into what's being called the Cactus Classic. Going to be played at University of Phoenix Stadium. U of A versus BYU to kick off their football seasons, being played in Glendale, the University of Phoenix Stadium, as mentioned. So aside from the game, which should be a fun game, I think it might be a pretty good matchup, there's a lot of talk about how BYU has sold more tickets to this point, and the question is being raised if this isn't going to end up being a bad move for the U of A.
Well, first off, shout out to @Michael_Abbott, who actually suggested this topic for the show on Twitter. So I didn't want to steal his topic without giving him a shout out. But honestly, I think there's potential pitfalls in this game for the Arizona Wildcats that have nothing to do with on the field. The fact that if you basically are coming up to Phoenix to test this market, to see if it is truly Wildcat country at all, if you have any juice in this marketplace. And if BYU comes in and it's a majority of BYU fans, you don't get a large U of A contingent, and you've basically played a road game in your home state, I think it hurts from what U of A can do from expanding their footprint in terms of U of A athletics beyond the Tucson marketplace. And I think it also could hurt in terms of Greg Byrne and his longevity with the U of A Wildcats, because I think he has a large plan that he wants to try to roll out with this team and make them more of an Arizona team rather than just a Tucson base. And if you fail miserably in this first time out of the gates, I think it could have ramifications. Why would Greg Byrne, if he has big hopes and big dreams for this university, and that first time he dips his toe in the water, it's a potential failure in terms of the support you get, well, why wouldn't he consider bigger jobs? Because this is a guy who could be an athletic director for a major program.
Yeah, there was talks that Florida was interested in him, or I think it was Florida.
And he is a guy that is a very large-scale thinker, a guy that wants to think out of the box, wants to expand. I think this could really hurt U of A athletics long-term.
Maybe I'm naive, Espo, but I don't see any way why this hurts the program or hurts the U of A brand. Yes, it might look unfortunate if it's predominantly blue and white and royal blue for BYU and not the navy blue for U of A. But at the end of the day, they're branching out. They're joining the Texas A&Ms of the world who are going to play in Jerry's World, and they're joining the Georgias who are going and playing at the Georgia Dome, and they're putting their teams in a bigger market with a bigger eye, a closer eye, and they're giving their fans and giving football an opportunity to have something exciting out of the gates when so often you just see cupcake BS games to start the season, especially from U of A, who's playing Grambling State at home the week after. I don't look at – the thing you have to realize, Espo, is if it was any team other than ASU or BYU – and they got outdrawn in from a attendance standpoint, then I think you have a problem. But BYU, if it was played at Sun Devil Stadium against ASU, there would be a huge BYU contingent there. If it was played in Tucson, there would be a good BYU contingent there, albeit it would probably be predominant U of A at that point and predominantly ASU there. But what I'm trying to get at is this is an opportunity that can help for their players, for their coaches to be able to recruit, to say we played in a NFL stadium on a national spotlight in week one in a marquee matchup on the West Coast. We're selling tickets for it. So if it's not completely sold out, you know, maybe it's a problem. But if it's sold out, but more so BYU, I don't think it's going to be sold out. But I just look at it this as a situation where I don't see huge pitfalls because it's branching out and doing more with the program that is trying to do more with their program long term.
But does it really help you in recruiting if you basically are playing a road game? I get that you're playing in an NFL stadium. That's great. It's all well and good. You're playing in a major market. But you brought up two teams in Texas A&M and Georgia playing, you know, at the Cowboys Stadium and in the Georgia Dome. Well, those two teams are huge in their state. Mm-hmm. They own their state. I don't think that, you know, the University of Arizona, you know, most people refer to them as Arizona, they don't own this state.
And
they
own
a very small portion.
How do you make the – you got to win first and foremost.
This is true. And then you've got to branch into the market
as well. And you have to take risks. You have to go outside the box. You have to make attempts. If it doesn't end up being perfect this time around, I don't know how it hurts you, because the only way you know that you could do something or make strides to become the state's football team after winning is by far and away first and foremost. So if they come up to Phoenix and lose 50-0 and then have a losing season, it was very counterintuitive and it probably didn't help whatsoever. But if you come up, play a competitive game, and you win, then all of a sudden you make baby steps. If you end up being at the top of the Pac-12 South standings this season, which I think would shock a lot of people if you're U of A, and then you come back to Phoenix again in a future destination, that's going to bring more fans to the table. It's going to bring more attention. There's only one way to figure out if it can work, and that's by doing it. And that's what they're doing.
I don't disagree. You have to do this if you want to try to own a state and you want to be a big boy in terms of college athletics. You're 100% right in that. Doing it isn't the problem, isn't the danger. It's the failure that's potentially there, and the fact that it sounds like it's probably going to be more BYU fans than U of A fans that the issue comes into play. And Greg Byrne is really where I think the issue is the biggest, because if he hasn't been considering big-time offers when they approach him, if this becomes a failure, you may lose a guy who's trying to push you in the right direction, trying to do it right, and has big-time thoughts on how to make this a huge program, not only in the state, but in the Pac-12. And you need that kind of thinking, because to me, it has never made sense why the University of Arizona and Arizona State University are not premier college athletic programs.
True.
You have the benefit of the place that you live. During the college year, it's beautiful in Arizona. Oh, the attractiveness of your student base—it doesn't hurt you either.
You add or subtract to that attractiveness of the talent.
You and I subtracted in terms of the University of Arizona attractiveness, but I did marry a Sun Devil. I didn't hold that against anybody. But you got to look at this, and Florida State's of the world, the Miamis, USC, UCLA, teams that are in, or universities that are in these places where it is great to live, have success. Why have the universities in Arizona not had that kind of success? It's beyond me. And I think what Greg Byrne is trying to do is put them in a position to be a big time player in Tucson and to kind of reap the benefit of where they are in terms of being close to a Phoenix market and being part of that. And they're trying to smack ASU in the mouth a little bit coming into their home turf.
Totally.
And saying, look, we can have a big time game. If this becomes a failure, you may have Greg Byrne start to wonder, is this the place for me?
Well,
and then that becomes a big problem for University of Arizona.
You're also forgetting, though, that Greg Byrne has the basketball program, which is going to be playing in the, what is it, the military on the base in Hawaii against Michigan State, the first game of the season. They've got a Final Four coming up in Phoenix. U of A is going to be competing to try to make a Final Four here in state. I feel like with Byrne, you've got a marquee national brand in basketball, and with football, you're playing with house money, because if you can make it great, then all of a sudden you have an incredible standing. I don't think you leave because of their football program at this point.
Look, football is king. Whether it's NFL or college, on a college campus.
Not at U of A, though.
But you know what? It could be if they won. And you need that money coming in to basically ramp up the rest of your university system. And in the end, a national championship in basketball is great. But if you do it in football, it's a game changer.
Totally.
It changes the mindset of the entire university, and even getting students into other programs that aren't coming to play, because football is king across the country. And there's a reason why most universities would much rather have a successful football program than a basketball program. It's great if you can have both, and U of A is trying to build that. But if I'm Greg Byrne and I go, okay, I can have U of A Wildcats, who, you know, they haven't won a title since 97. Mm-hmm. They've been in competition, but they haven't gotten over the hump, and a mediocre football team, or I can go run the athletic program at a perennial powerhouse in football. I'm going to take football 9 times out of 10. And I'm a guy that went to U of A, and I'd still make that decision.
Sure. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. So what we have coming up next here, I went to Larry Fitzgerald's Fitz's Supper Club, which was over at Dominic's Steakhouse. A lot of really great personalities coming through there. We talked to Devin Booker for a while, Tyler Ulis, PJ Tucker on the Suns, talked to Larry Fitzgerald, obviously. And then we talked to some celebrities that came through. And John Sally was the host of this. And I kind of had a dry heat check level, a conversation with him, kind of more off-base stuff. And so I wanted to have that interview for this week's show. So here's me with John Sally from earlier this week outside of Larry Fitzgerald's Supper Club 2016. Being a part of this event with Larry, how much does it mean to you to be a part of something that he's been doing for many years now?
I'm really proud of Larry, man. I like him as a person. when I came last year. I don't know if he was going to have me back this year because I kind of clowned on him. But, you know, he had a great personality about it. I just really like coming here. I'm really proud of what he does. I was wondering. I said, isn't it season? And then I realized it was Monday.
Yep.
And they were going to eat at a steakhouse anyway. So you might as well get some money while you're doing it.
You follow Larry's career? Have you followed what he's been able to accomplish? You pay attention to the Cardinals at all?
No.
No?
No, but I know him. I don't really pay attention to sports, really. I don't really. I'm doing, unless I'm on television doing it, I'm sure starting to produce other kind of shows.
Okay, well, speaking of shows, all right, so who's a badder combination of bad boys? Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, or Bill Laimbeer and Dennis Rodman? Who
Bill
would you
Laimbeer
pick?
Dennis Rodman? Because Will and Martin were acting. Those guys are serious.
Now, if you had to win a basketball game, do you pick Will Smith to team up with, or do you pick Whoopi Goldberg as your coach?
Whoopi Goldberg is my coach. No, you pick Will Smith. Wow. Go ahead.
So Whoopi is a coach, though. So
Whoopi is a coach.
Tell me about
what get in the game.
What was a more fun role? You know, those are two classic movies. What was a more fun role? Was it playing basketball, or was it kind of going outside your box and playing the nerd?
Yeah, I love going outside the box. I love being not John Sally and what's called. In the movie, I made a play in Eddie. I played Nate Wilson, but in Bad Boys, I was Fletcher all the way through.
That must have been a fun experience for you. Last one for you. So coming here to Phoenix in the late 80s, early 90s,
yeah,
playing against the Suns, what do you remember? You know, this come through some kind of tough times these days with the winning and the environment, but what do you remember coming to Phoenix, playing those teams, about the fans, the players, the environment? What do you remember?
Let me tell you. We were in the Coliseum, right?
Yeah.
And we stayed at this hotel that was like this, you know, it had suites and you had like a little part here and you go, I forgot the name of it. I was like, oh, this is amazing. I never had a room like that. You know, I'm a rookie. And I put my bags down and I jump on the bed and almost break my back. It was a bed. I was like, oh my God, this bed is terrible. I remember we went into the mall and we made a video because back then you could make them in these video box. And Isaiah can walk through the mall, Dennis can walk, we can all walk anywhere, and there was no problem. Now guys got to have security, guys are getting robbed, they're getting mobbed. It was a fun time. James Edwards, I was playing against him, he wound up becoming my teammate. It's a bunch of fun.
It's a different time, like you mentioned, what the guys deal with the social media and things like that now. How much different it is for them than it was for you guys?
My God, you were a ball player, man. You were, you know, you were patted on the back and revered because you got out. And, you know, you would do things because you knew to do them. Nowadays, people expect you to do things. People expect you to be a certain way. And they hold you up to everyone else. We didn't do that back then. When you came in the league, they may have said you reminded of somebody, but they didn't say, is he going to be the next Jerry West? Is he going to be the next Kareem? And it was like, is he going to help the team win? It's the difference.
So there's my interview with John Sally. A lot of fun stuff. Bringing up Eddie and Bad Boys was the one thing I wanted to do with this guy, and he played along.
Look, you're playing to my wheelhouse. 90s movies is what I love, and I loved hearing it. But it kills me that you didn't ask him about one thing that in my mind is John Sally, the best damn sports show, period.
Yes.
You did not bring that up.
I thought about it.
I wanted to see you rip that Band-Aid off, because I'm sure it's not like the happiest of times, because that show at times was a complete and utter disaster. I would love to have heard John Sally's behind the curtain stories about that. I'm pretty sure he was on there with Tom Arnold at one point, Carissa Thompson. Like, there's got to be dirt there that we could have gotten to. But the stuff you got to in terms of the movies and Eddie and Bad Boys was gold.
Absolutely. Well, thanks to John Sally for joining us for all of that. Now let's shift gears, talking a little basketball. So you brought an interesting article to my attention that we wanted to run with here, and they had all the rookies together for photo shoot and video and things like that. And part of it was they had to participate in a survey about each other. And they were asked the question, who do you think is going to be the Kia Rookie of the Year?
I love that you got to get the sponsor in there.
I know.
It's always about sponsors. And if you want to sponsor this show, we're always willing.
Absolutely, especially Kia.
I'll change my name to whatever your company is.
Which rookie will have the best career? You know, stuff like that. So going through this list, you know, they thought the Rookie of the Year would be Chris Dunn. Ben Simmons all the way down to 3. Who will have the best career? Brandon Ingram 1, Chris Dunn 2, Ben Simmons all the way tied for 4th at 6.7% with Dragan Bender. Do you think these guys aren't a fan of Ben Simmons? Like, I keep looking through this list. Ben Simmons wasn't at the top of any of these lists.
Well, why would they be a fan of him? He's a one-and-done guy in college that didn't have success in college. I could see where other players...
He had success. He just played for a horrible team.
I judge success at a team level in college because one guy can carry a team to the tournament and one guy can get hot and basically give his team a huge tournament run.
Seth Curry.
Steph Curry. And Davidson. You look at it and I was underwhelmed with what he did at LSU, and I imagine that his counterparts across the NBA, the other rookies, kind of feel the same way about it. What's interesting to me is people thought Dragan Bender has as much potential as Ben Simmons to have a huge NBA career. You got to like that if you're a Suns fan, right? And everybody's worried about his question marks, but I think Dragan Bender has as much upside as anybody in this draft to be a superstar. Now, is his floor potentially lower? Sure, but I like to hear that it's not just me being a homer. His counterparts in the NBA actually feel he has a chance of success as well.
Now, let's continue being a homer, though. All right?
I'm good at that. I was paid to do it for 5 years.
Suns rookie and second-round pick Tyler Ulis just keeps popping up as you're looking at this article. As going back to which rookie will have the best NBA career, you mentioned Dragan Bender was tied for 4th there, but Tyler Ulis received votes for that. Who is the biggest steal at where he was selected in the draft? Ulis was 2nd at 12.9% of the vote behind DeJounte Murray of the San Antonio Spurs.
Marquise Chris showed up on that list in honorable mention.
You keep scrolling down, and he was the best defender. He was listed as the 4th best defender out of rookies, Tyler Ulis was. When we have who is the best playmaker out of the rookies, Tyler Ulis is 3rd on that list at 20.6%. So basically what I'm getting at is the Suns had these 2 top 10 picks that they made, who, albeit are projects, are very young and need time to develop. And then you have this guy they drafted at the beginning of the 2nd round named Tyler Ulis, who was a stud at the summer league, is everywhere with the Suns because he's joining Devin Booker, and you see him at the front of a lot of little promo things they're doing around town. And now you pull up an article like this, and he's mentioned more than Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris.
Well, look, I will always take a guy who's respected by his peers. That says something, that he had enough impact in his time in college at Kentucky to show the guys that he went up against in college hoops that he has potential. And I love that. And let's be honest, I loved the steal question. I think he should have been 1 because Ryan McDonough was basically Danny Ocean. The NBA draft was basically the Bellagio, and Tyler Ulis was the money that he stole out of the vault. And all right, that's how big of a steal this kid could be in this draft, because if he weren't 5'8", if he wasn't the size of Danny DeVito, he would have been a guy that was drafted in the lottery. You got high value on that. Now, I'm not saying he's going to have a better career than Dragan Bender or Marquise Chris necessarily, but I think he's going to fill a role and exceed expectations from a guy that's drafted at the beginning of the 2nd round, and that's the kind of guy you want in your system. We always talk about Bruce Arians and Steve Keim drafting guys that were, the captains of their college team and looking for a certain type of guy. Well, that's what Ryan McDonough was doing here, was looking for a guy with a leadership mentality, a guy that will do anything for his teammates, will come in and have success. And maybe he didn't have the physical tools necessarily to be looked at as a great prospect, but he has the intangibles, the skill set to actually come in and succeed. That's what excites me the most about him.
He has that it factor, which I really like, because watching him in college the last couple of years, he just put the team on his back. And the fact that you can be 5'8", and being a top defender, 5'8 guys aren't normally known for being great defenders. That's all will. That's all hustle. Doesn't take talent to hustle. So I also didn't want to overlook the fact that Marquise Chris was voted 3rd best as the rookie that is most athletic. And I think that is what has Suns fans most excited about him, is potential, because the athleticism is there. Now it's honing in the craft.
Well, look, he's going to be the Sun that has the most impressive vines this season. If we're going to judge, yes. If we're going to judge a rookie season 6 seconds at a time, Marquese Chris would be rookie of the year in the NBA. I guarantee it, because he's going to have some dunks that are going to blow fans' minds. Now, the problem is the rest of his basketball skills aren't there yet. Now, he's only played basketball for 5 years, I believe. He's a football player before that, quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. So this guy is a project. But if we're going to judge on pure athleticism and what and oh my God moments that you're going to get from this kid, he would be the top of my list with Suns rookies this year, because you're going to see some impressive things. Dragan Bender is the guy that secretly could have the most impact as a rookie. I'm not comparing his game to Kristaps Porzingis. I'm not going to be that lazy comparison in, oh, to your Euro white guys that could come in. But I think what you could see is nobody expected a lot out of Kristaps last year. He surprised people. I think Dragan could do the same, because he's been a pro since he was an early teenager, all right? He knows what that grind is kind of like. I think he could surprise people. I'm excited to see how these guys develop, and it was nice to see them show up in these rookie surveys. But none of this means anything if they don't come out.
But you make a good point, because it's one thing if media is doing these surveys. It's another thing if it's his peers. And that's the point that you made that I think needs to be make noted of most, is that these guys pop up and Ulis pops up this much because of his peers. And I think that speaks volumes to what the Suns may have got, as you say, the steal out of the Bellagio.
Yeah, so, it is. It is respect, and you have to earn respect. Respect is not given. You have to earn it, and Tyler Ulis has earned it.
We talked about power rankings last week. This is more informative than power rankings are.
Yeah.
Is votes among peers of their own players. So
it's not some nerd in his basement in his underwear writing up his list, which I've been that guy. I've been paid to be that guy. But
in
I
your
still
underwear,
prefer
too?
This. And, well, you know, sometimes you're lazy.
Sometimes you're lazy. So Ocho Cinco apparently is a fan of the Diamondbacks jerseys. He tweeted this out this week that, and I'll pull up the tweet here if I could find it. There it is.
You're supposed to have these things
really,
prepared.
I had it in a different tab on the laptop. Just take it easy. I really need the Diamondbacks gunmetal jersey. Best jersey ever beside whatever Nike makes for the Ducks Beavers during this season. So I happen to agree. I've always liked the dark gray. It's different. I think it's bold and it's fun and it's fine. Other jerseys of theirs I haven't been a huge fan of that are the new ones, but these I like. So the Diamondbacks respond saying, red or teal, ? We know a guy. So he responded, red and large, please. I can steal bases as well, but can't hit to get on base. So now Ocho Cinco is wanting to join the Arizona Diamondbacks in a roundabout fashion by just wanting to get a jersey.
Well, look, I am just glad we finally found the one person that legitimately likes the Diamondbacks' new uniform.
Yeah.
I never imagined it would be Ocho Cinco.
No.
All right? It's fun. And you know what? I want to praise the Diamondbacks social media team, because this is how you do it right. You have fun with social media. You engage people, especially if it's a quasi-celebrity like an Ocho Cinco. And then they actually followed through. They sent him a Zach Greinke jersey in red, his size, with a Zach Greinke bobblehead, and they got interaction about that. That's the way you do social media. It's about entertaining your fans and doing it right, and not everybody commits to that. Some people move away from it, but I like the way the Diamondbacks did it. Other teams in town do a fun job with it as well, but I like this. Now, I don't want to see Ocho Cinco in a Diamondbacks uniform other than that Zach Greinke jersey, but it kind of segues to another thing that I'm calling a little bit of an audible here.
I have no idea where we're going here,
pun intended,
folks.
But you know what? There's another celebrity, a former football player that's trying to get into Major League Baseball, and Tim Tebow, who tried out for teams. And you know what? If I'm the Diamondbacks, maybe I show a little interest because they need a miracle, and I heard that Tim Tebow knows a guy pretty well that can help make miracles happen. So
there you go. To squash that, another headline I saw from this week is from Tony La Russa, who said that Tebow's a really good athlete that ain't going to make it.
Look, look, I'm not saying it's so, the right baseball kind of move. I'm just saying,
from other standpoint,
if you're going to be celebrity chasing like you are on Twitter with Ocho Cinco, we might as well get a guy that has a connection to the big guy, God, and see if we can turn this thing around, because it's not happening
they
any other way.
They could use someone
right
on their side. I completely understand it. Hey, let's play trade, extend, release. This is our favorite game. So going back to the Suns talk, you know, we mentioned Zoran Drogic, and that got me thinking. He wore the number 10. I want to trade, extend, release the worst brother of two brothers as basketball players. So I pose the question to you. You can trade one, extend one, or release one. Seth Curry, Robin Lopez, Zoran Drogic.
Oh, to quote the great Al McCoy, oh, brother.
Oh, brother.
I'm not sure I want any of these guys, but you know what? If I have to do it, because that's the way this game is played and there's no easy out.
Or else you could leave, you know? You don't have to play. We'll find someone else to do it.
I'm going to trade Seth Curry because we might get lucky and somebody might think it's Steph Curry and you get something of true value out of it.
Yes, I actually am going to extend Seth Curry, and here's why. I'm hoping that one day Seth Curry wakes up and he turns into Steph Curry, and that all of a sudden the skills that come from mom and dad, the inherited athleticism and shooting ability that comes from his father, all of a sudden clicks with Seth Curry, and all of a sudden he becomes Steph Curry 2.0. So I extend with the hope that maybe one day he wakes up and that happens.
Look, you got a better chance of signing Del Curry to be a broadcaster and having him play and hoping he's going to catch the magic of his former career than Seth Curry turning into Steph Curry. I can tell you because I watched him firsthand on a 10-day contract with the Phoenix Suns, and I own his authentic jersey after
another
the fact. It is another
jersey.
Obscure jersey. It always comes back to that. If I'm going to extend a guy, for me, it's Robin Lopez, because he showed flashes of being a serviceable starter.
Hey, he's been very good the last couple of years.
Bench player in the NBA. So I would do that. Plus, he loves Batman, and I actually saw part of The Dark Knight Rises with him in theater. So I'd go with that for personal reasons,
So you're personally biased.
I am always biased.
For the same reason that you want to extend Robin Lopez is the reason I'm trading him, because out of these three, he is really the only guy you can get anything of value in return.
Okay, fair enough.
And it looks like we're both releasing Zoran.
Yeah, nice guy.
Nice guy.
Was basically signed to try to hope that his brother would stay in town.
And I don't think Goron is too pleased with the Suns organization these days. So if you extend Zoran, it would be, you don't know if you're getting all of a guy because, you know, you traded his brother and his brother left on salty terms. And if you trade Zoran, now you look like huge jerks to the Drogic family because you traded both brothers.
Technically, they did in the trade that sent Goron to Miami.
Technically, they did trade them both.
So there you go. Look, the tough thing is they had the best nicknames of any of these brothers. They were Double Dragon, which is amazing. And I say that because I came up with the nickname, but still, it was a great nickname.
I tweeted out, and I thought it would have a lot more traction than it did. You know, I thought it was funny, and it kind of fell flat in its face. It happens to me a lot on Twitter. I tweeted out the picture of Will Ferrell in Starsky and Hutch, and he says, "This time, two dragons." You know, that didn't catch on.
You got the same reaction here in the
room. Clearly. Too. Clearly, it's a lot funnier in my head than it was on Twitter.
That's because four people saw Starsky and Hutch, and two of them are sitting here.
I liked that movie.
I did
too.
Do it.
So we are in agreement there that we are releasing Zoran Drogic. But I think I'm getting the better end of making better moves by trading Robin Lopez and getting more assets in return. I'm channeling my inner Ryan McDonough much better than you are today.
If you say so. I still think I'm a better GM and always will.
Okay.
Well, I'm channeling my inner Ocho Cinco. I'm going to be a little overly cocky here.
You have any Scott player stories?
No, I don't have any Scott players.
You don't have any memories of any of these guys who wore the number 10? Tony Batista, Justin Upton, Sam Cassell.
No, I remember being a huge Jeff Fiegels fan when I was a kid because literally he was the only Cardinal that would make the Pro Bowl when I was a kid rooting for this team. It was the punter. So Jeff Eagles is the guy that I remember. I remember listening to Tom Dillon on the radio for all the home games because you couldn't watch a Cardinals game in town unless you went to a game.
Yes.
We couldn't afford tickets but once a year, so I listened to the radio, and I fell in love with Jeff Eagles. Tried to punt, couldn't do it, couldn't do anything athletically. So Jeff Eagles is a guy I remember. Sam Cassell I just remember as the guy that was one of the throw-ins for the Charles Barkley deal.
That didn't want to be here.
That didn't want to be here and crushed my spirit as a fan. But yeah, that's a majority of what I remember from.
I have a Sam Cassell story, not from when he was on the Suns. It was when he was on the Clippers and they were playing the Suns in the playoffs. I'll never forget this. I can't remember if he was being guarded by Steve Nash or another point guard, but Sam Cassell was slowly walking the ball up the court. And he was kind of laughing and joking around and kind of taunting whoever was guarding him and ended up getting an 8-second backcourt violation. He was like laughing and joking. All of a sudden his face got stoic, like, wait, what just happened? Was completely not paying attention and got a turnover. I was at that game. It was a classic memory I have of Sam Cassell. And I want to just give a shout out to Tony Batista, because when I would practice in the batting cages as a kid, I always tried his batting stance and it never worked out for me. So I have no idea how he did it or had the balls to do it with guys throwing 95 mile an hour fastballs in his direction.
See, I always did the Craig Council. I just swung the bat way over
over the head,
because I knew it didn't matter. I wasn't getting a hit anyway, so I might as well just have fun with it. I think it's time to tell people how they can connect with us.
Please.
Twitter, @DryHeatCheck, Facebook.com/DryHeatCheck. You can find us now on Stitcher. We're on Stitcher.
Whoa!
So you can find us there. iTunes, Dry Heat Check. Google Play, Dry Heat Check. Audio Boom, Dry Heat Check. You getting the pattern here?
Hey, and you know what's cool? You mentioned iTunes. I checked out our podcast with my Apple TV over the weekend. So you could be sitting on your couch with your Apple TV and take a break from the TV part and listen to the podcast.
You can find us anywhere audio is. You can find us also on Instagram. I started that just for the fun of it, too. So @DryHeatCheck and DryHeatCheck.com, which will take you to Sports360AZ.com for every episode. And you can see all of our tweets and everything you need to know right there. We encourage you, as always, on iTunes and Google Play, leave a review for the show. It helps new people find the program. Plus, we're vain, and we want to know that you like us.
That's Greg.
That's why we need you.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been episode Scott Player, episode 10. We've made it a full 10 episodes, Greg, of the Dry Heat Check.